This is going to be a problem. Esau and Jacob didn't like each other. Before they were born, they fought. When they were being born, they fought. Jacob came out grabbing at Esau's heel. Their parents didn't treat them equally. And they lived their lives in this state of conflict. Jacob schemed to get the better of Esau. One day he did. Esau traded his birthright for a meal. I feel a connection with Esau. Not that I've been cheated or swindled, but I feel this connection with Esau because he worked hard. I think he was honest. I think he was very kind. Wasn't all that smart, apparently. I have a completely opposite feeling about Jacob. He schemed. He was dishonest. He was sneaky. I don't like the conflict that's here. I don't like the sneakiness of Jacob. I don't like the beginning of the story of Jacob and Esau at all. And though I have a strong connection with Esau, I feel for him. I'm like, man, this guy got a raw deal right in this part here. I know that I have, and I will likely again act like Jacob, the schemer, the sneaky one. But I am so glad that this short reading here is not the end of the story. So, this coming up now is more of the story. It didn't end up with a scheming, dishonest, sneaky Jacob. Steve Case, that brilliant author friend of mine, he wrote the piece on Ezekiel that I told the story, I don't know, several weeks, several months, I don't know how long ago it's been. He wrote about Jacob in the same book, God Up Close. It comes from the Bible, but here's what Steve says about this and other stories in the book. He says, dramatized? Sure. Real? Absolutely. Of all the words you can use to describe God, distant isn't one of them. God is here, now, above, below, beside, beneath, behind, before, within, embracing, inspiring, encompassing, pouring, enveloping. So let's hear about Jacob's up-close encounter with God. Jacob squatted quietly by the fire. Yesterday the camp was alive, and one of his wives was constantly shooing one of his many children away from the fire. Well, from him, actually. All of his wives knew to keep the children away when he got like this. He loved his children with all his heart. Loved them as much as he loved anything. But when they were ambunctious and full of vinegar, he would snap at them and they would cry. Then he would hold them and whisper gently, "It's okay. Daddy's sorry." Until one of their mothers came and shooed them away. This is what camp was like when he was thinking about things, when he was deep in himself. He had sent the entire camp, his wives, his children, the servants, the animals, away. They had taken the tents and left him alone by the fire with his bedroll. With a stick, he poked at the wood in the flames. It was not worry that kept him awake. And it was not the fear that his brother could very well kill him tomorrow. It was the thought of facing his brother in the first place. The brother whom he had cheated out of the family inheritance. The brother whom he had left behind to care for the family business while he took the money and ran. Esau. Esau. He thought of his brother almost every day. He thought of the shouting his brother had done at the top of the mountain when he realized not only was the money gone, but so was Jacob. His brother was a big man. He had been a big boy. When they were children, their mother used to say they'd even fought with each other in her belly, and she had to sing them to sleep to get them to calm down and let her rest. As boys, Esau was always stronger, faster. He used to push Jacob down and throw rotten fruit at him, and his aim was perfect. It was merciless. When he was 8, Esau brought home animals for their mother to cook. It was usually some bird or deer that Esau had simply beamed with a rock and then run up and broken its neck. Their father Isaac would laugh and put his hand on Esau's shoulder and say he was proud of his firstborn. The firstborn by mere minutes. But that was the way of the people. Firstborn was firstborn. Esau would look at him and he would smile. Jacob grew to hate the looks his brother gave him. First it was just one of annoyance, and then it became a deep hatred. So Jacob had done what he had done. He had run away and started a life. Then the voice of God came to him and told him that he had to go home. He had to heal the rift with his brother. He had to atone, amend, apologize. No, just leaving with all his wives and children was an event, especially after what Rachel had done. And now they had gone ahead with gifts for Esau. Word had already come back that Esau had gathered an army of 400 men and would be standing at the end of the field where they had played as children. Tomorrow Jacob would walk into that field alone. He would kneel before his older brother and he would beg his forgiveness. Now, he would squat here by the fire and poke the flames and think about things. He was not the young man who had spent all his time studying. He was not the young man whom, with the help of his own mother, deceived his father and cheated his brother. And that man was gone. That man was someone else. These years working for his father-in-law had made him into someone else. Jacob was so deep in thought that he didn't hear the stranger arrive. The stranger was so silent that Jacob didn't know he was even there until he saw the man sitting on his haunches with his arms resting on his knees as Jacob was staring into the flames. The man looked up just as Jacob did. Their eyes met and the stranger seemed to smile, but Jacob wasn't sure. The stranger tilted his head the way a child does when he's trying to ponder a flower or a strange new animal. The man across the fire had no beard. He had no lines on his face. Jacob would have guessed that, he'd be no more than a teenager. But for the sheer size of him, he was bigger than he remembered Esau being. Jacob slowly moved his hand from his knee to the handle of his scabbard tied to his belt. The stranger smiled a little more as he knew exactly what Jacob was thinking. The man's teeth were white and perfect. It was now that Jacob saw the man's face. The fire reflected in his eyes in a way that fascinated and disturbed Jacob down to his soul. The hair that spilled down from beneath his turban was pure white. His clothes were the same as any other man's, but Jacob saw that they were clean. No, not clean, they were new. It was as if this perfect man did not exist and then suddenly came into being in an instant. And Jacob had long ago stopped being surprised by the things that happened in his life. Perhaps it wasn't that he was not surprised. It was that when these things happened, he simply understood that these things happened. He was no longer easily upset. "Who are you?" Jacob asked. The man, this new man that squatted by the fire across from him, simply continued to smile and tilted his head to the other side as if he were apprising him. "Who are you?" Jacob asked again. Still there was no answer. The man's eyes glistened in the firelight. Jacob had had enough. He was cold. He was tired. He had spent his last few days packing up his wife and children and sent them away. He'd spent his last few days picturing the many ways his older brother might kill him. Now some alabaster-faced man-child was playing games with him in the middle of the night. This was too much. So Jacob stood and started to withdraw the scabbard from its sheath. But before he could withdraw the blade, the man across the fire circle was on his feet and leaping over the flames at Jacob. He put two marble white hands on Jacob's shoulder and forced him to the ground. Jacob went down on his back hard. The knife tumbled away from him and out of range of the fire's glow. Jacob stood and gained his balance, the stranger was gone. Jacob stood still, listening. He listening in the way that when he and his brother used to play hiding games as boys. See, Esau was too big and too dense just to be quiet, and Jacob always found him immediately. Now Jacob listened, but he could not hear the man come from his side and push him to the ground again before rolling away and disappearing into the dark. But when the man leaped out of the darkness a third time and into the firelight, Jacob nearly shouted. This man had wings, greater than those of a hawk, longer than the tent he shared with Rachel, wider than his camels when they stood side by side. The stranger had wings. Jacob stood in awe as the stranger dropped from the dark and shoved him to the ground yet again. This time Jacob landed on his back and all of the air was forced from his lungs. He gasped, trying to breathe in, but it seemed he could only breathe out. Finally, his lungs settled and he began to breathe normally. The stranger stepped out of the darkness and into the light of the fire. The wings were tucked behind him now, but Jacob could see that they were still higher than the giant man's head. Jacob looked the stranger in the eye and held out his hand to be lifted up. The stranger stepped forward and grabbed Jacob's hand. Jacob yanked the man forward and planted both his feet on the winged man's rib cage, and in one smooth motion, he rolled back and shoved the man with both of his feet forward, over his head. Jacob let go of his hand, and the stranger landed far enough away that the dying fire did not illuminate him. Then Jacob heard him laugh. And it was not an evil laugh. It was more like a child's laugh coming from a man's throat. The stranger was having fun. "Who are you?" Jacob shouted at the dark. But the question was moot. Jacob already knew he was in the presence of one of God's messengers, and this one liked to wrestle. Jacob knew that as long as he stood in the light of the fire, he was at a disadvantage. He was the only one who could be seen. It was time to make things a little more equal. So Jacob scooped up two handfuls of sand and tossed it onto the flames. The dark was almost instantaneous. "This is how God answers my prayers," Jacob said to the dark. This time he heard the steps. He heard the flap of the wings that lifted the stranger into the air when the sound of his footsteps stopped. Jacob was not caught by surprise. He felt the front of the angel's new robe and pulled them both to the ground. They wrestled this way until the sun began to break over the horizon. They both turned and looked at the growing light. In the dim, Jacob was able to grab the angel and force him to the ground. He put a knee on the being's chest and pinned him there. Then the being spoke for the first time. "It is dawn. I must go." Jacob looked at him. He had beaten an angel, but the angel had no blood on him. His new clothes were still new, and Jacob could taste his own blood and dirt in his mouth. But he had beaten one of God's own angels. "My God has sent you to me with a blessing. You will give it to me now." The angel smiled. Jacob grabbed him by the front of his tunic and yanked him forward so that they were nearly touching noses. "You will give me a blessing." The angel said, "What is your name?" "My name is Jacob." The angel reached out, and with no more effort than a man picks a blade of grass, he touched Jacob's hip with his finger and pushed the bone out of its socket. Jacob howled in pain and fell forward. The stranger pushed Jacob off him and let him roll back onto his back. Screaming at the searing pain that now covered his entire side, Jacob clutched at his own hip and tried to pound the bone back into place. The sun was beyond breaking over the horizon, and Jacob looked up and saw the face of the angel clearly for the first time. "Who are you?" he said. The angel bent low and said, "Why would you want to know my name?" He put his hands on Jacob's face and brushed the sweating, filthy hair from his eyes. Jacob met the angel's eyes, and in that moment, there was no pain. The angel said, "You have wrestled enough. It's time to go home. This is God's blessing. You are no longer Jacob. From this moment, you are Israel." With that, the angel was gone, and the searing pain returned. Jacob, now Israel, screamed again as the injury was happening all over again. He pounded on the bone that was visible through his own robe. On the third try, he felt the bone slide back into its socket. The intense, blinding pain subsided and became a dull ache that embedded itself deep inside Jacob's hip. It was a pain he would feel for the rest of his life. Lying on his back in the dirt, Jacob waited until he was sure the sun was fully up before he rolled onto his stomach. He crawled until he was on all fours, and then he stood. The first step sent a pain from his bruised hip to his entire body. The second step was easier than the next. He limped toward the horizon. His name was Israel. Last night he had wrestled with an angel of God. Today he would meet his brother again, would probably kill him and take his wife and children and all his treasure. Nothing surprised him anymore. That's the rest of the story. And even there, it's not complete. But it leaves us at a point where we can ask some significant questions like, have you ever gone a long time without speaking to someone? And how long? How long has it been? We can all hold grudges. How does it feel when someone holds a grudge against you? So while you're not speaking to someone, who's not speaking to you? What if the grudge is deserved? All those things go through because we get indignant when we're like, well, I'm not going to talk to them or I'm not going to forgive them. We get indignant and say it's our right. We can all hold grudges. The ancient Jews, they believed that different parts of the body controlled different emotions. Love, for example, was carried and controlled by the abdomen. For instance, haven't you ever felt that squishy feeling you get when you fall in love? And haven't you ever been sick to your stomach when you break up? The Jews felt that. They got that. It was also believed that the pelvic area was the center of pride. And yes, that analogy that you're thinking right now, you can think it. It's legit. They got that, too. After wrestling with the angel dislocated Jacob's hip bone, his pride. Jacob could not have gone to meet his brother as the man he was. He had to have his pride dislocated in order to go any further. I know that we have broken relationships in our lives. Friends we used to have. Old fights that get buried deep in our souls and are never resolved. Sometimes we do have to fix things. We have to make amends. Jacob had his pride dislocated. It had to happen so he could become a better man. And God wants us to be better people. And we have to make an effort. Like, take a step to mend a broken relationship. Offer friendship to someone you haven't ever been close to. Suck up your pride. Or let your pride be dislocated and apologize for hurting someone. Make an effort to make things better. All of us act like Jacob did. All of us act like Esau did. And God is a God who loves restored relationships. And I know that God is a God of grace, forgiveness, and unconditional love. God is a God of dislocated pride. And I'm also pretty sure God is not a fan of sneaky. Amen.